Good summer day to you guys. Good, it's not good morning, it's not good afternoon, but we're glad to have you here. It's a rainy day, and I know we're all busy. We're going to try to move along as expeditiously as we can, but at the same time, give full throat to any discussion that needs to be had. Just a couple of things to establish. We have, by way of video and teleconference, Matt Montgomery is here with us. And Matt, can you hear me?
I can.
We can hear you, and everybody can see Matt. Is that right? Those are the requirements of the open meetings law, and we think we have complied with those. So he will be joining in with us at certain times. I am looking around the room, and I'm relying on Mabel, but I'm going to declare that there is in fact a quorum present, and we are able to do business. I would ask you to do one thing. If you have a phone, please, for the convenience of those around you, put it on vibrate or turn it off completely. We're all busy. If you have to take a phone call, you may have to step out, but please just put it on vibrate or turn it off. First order of business would be to introduce board members and guests, and I think we'll just start. I'm Harold McKinney. I'm the Boyle County Judge Executive for only six more months. And yes, David, I'm smiling all the way through it, my friend. But we'll start. Mabel, you want to introduce yourself?
I'm Mabel Duke, and I'm the Director of Workforce Services for the Bluegrass Local Workforce Development Area.
We can just start around the table, please.
I'm Ryan Henson. I'm the Regional Manager of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation.
I'm Lisa Farmer. I'm the Program Director for Adult Education in Bourbon County.
I'm Steve Tressler. I'm with the Kentucky Labor Cabinet's Registered Apprenticeship Division.
John Norley with the AmTech, Electrical Apprenticeship Program as well.
I'm Mike Pryor. I'm Nicholas County Judge Executive.
I'm David Boggs with Opportunity for Work and Learning.
I'm John Sulford. I'm Chairman of the Woodford County Economic Development Board.
Good to see a center guy here, John.
Joshua Pierce, Regional Manager for the Office of Employment and Training.
Daniel King, CPA with a local accounting firm representing small business.
Okay.
Mike Wynn, Bourbon County Judge Executive.
David West, Jessamine County Judge Executive.
Susan Kraft, representing small business.
All right, we'll just start right over here, and some of you, tell us what you do or your position.
Okay, I'm Stacey May. I'm the Planning and Information Manager for the Bluegrass Workforce Local.
Tad Patterson, Bluegrass Area Development District, Electronic Media Manager.
I'm Victor Ponder, Bluegrass here.
Michael Bushman, Financial Officer for Bluegrass M.
Justin Ross, CFO, Bluegrass
M. David Dellinger, Executive Director of Bluegrass M.
Ethan Limbaugh, I'm the Business Services Manager for the Bluegrass Local Workforce Area. Sorry.
Tiffany Lee, Services Manager for the Bluegrass Local Workforce Area.
Amy Glasgow, Workforce Services Manager for the Bluegrass Workforce
Local Area. Ella D. Dickinson with the Mayor's Office in Lexington, Kentucky.
I'm the one-stop operator of the Bluegrass Area Workforce Services.
Tammy Underwood, Director of Workforce Services.
Sherry Johnson, the Workforce Director with the Lincoln County Area Development District.
Rick Christman, CEO of Plumbing Solutions.
Anna Gregory, Administrative Assistant for Workforce.
Ray Leathers, I'm your Commissioner for Workforce Innovation. I'm Frank.
Douglas Beard, Special Assistant to the Office of Employment and Training.
Darlene Bessel, Department for Workforce Investment. I'm your WIO liaison.
Tim Wyman, Carpenters of Millwright, trustee for apprenticeship.
Did we get everybody? Okay. This has been very carefully choreographed today and planned, and I'm told that we've got to change the agenda just a little bit. Jacqueline, don't be upset. Don't worry about upsetting my carefully choreographed meeting, okay? If you all would allow me, Jacqueline has to leave. If you would allow me, as the chairman, to drop down to item 2B, which is the finance report. And Jacqueline, you have the floor, please.
Thank you, Jim.
Michael, you have the floor.
All right. We're going to go to the financial packet. I'll actually just go over this cover sheet in the financial packet. It basically just summarizes the finances that follow. On the budget overview, you will see that we are 63% expended through May. These numbers are based on what was actually booked and expended through May 31st. So if you include the May Career Center invoice, since these are usually booked a month behind, that would bump us up to around 70% expended through May 31st of this year. Original budget has total expenditures of about $5.6 million. We have expended about $3,270,000 of the $3,752,000 of grant money that is set to expire this year. So June 30, 2018, money is set to expire. That leaves us with a balance of $82,410 spend before June 30th. The remaining $1,870,000 of the budget is classified as carryover. This will expire June 30, 2019. Of the remaining $82,000 that we need to spend, $45,915 is administrative dollars, and $36,495 is youth money we need to spend. Of our originally approved budget from June of 2017, administrative expenses were about 75% expended through May. We have spent 88% of the admin funds that need to that will expire this year. And again, when comparing to the original budget from June of 2017, adult expenditures were about 113% through May. Now, we did have two transfers that were approved to move $650,000 as well as $370,000 from dislocated worker to the adult program. This was to help cover the increased spending in the adult program. So if you consider those transfers as well as including the May invoice from the Career Center, really our expenditures through May would be around 73%. We have spent all adult funds that are set to expire this year. Dislocated worker program, again comparing to the original budget, 31% expended through May. So including the transfers, that would decrease the dislocated worker budget, as well as including the May invoice, that would put us around 64% expended through May. And we have spent all money that's set to expire for dislocated worker program. Youth, we're 64% through May, 71% if you include the Career Center invoice. And so we have spent 97% of the money that's set to expire next month, or this end of this month. Finally, we have about $617,000 obligations for the adult program, $81,000 for the dislocated worker program, and $210,000 for the youth.
That it? Any questions? Anybody have any questions of Michael?
I have a question.
Sure.
So this year, the way it looks like it's going to end up, we're not going to actually lose any money then?
Or we have we're set to spend all the money that we is going to expire this year.
David okay.
Any other questions? Do you want to do an approval individually or wait till Jacqueline does her presentation?
I think you can do them both together, can't you?
Sure. Okay, I understand we do not have our notice of funding allocations yet.
That's correct.
Is that correct? So you're going to do a best estimate of the budget, and we'll go from there. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You have the floor.
Thank you. Okay, so after the financial packet that Michael just went over, there should be a page that just says FY19 budget.
Jacqueline, we're a lot of gray hair around the table. You have to speak up.
I apologize. So after the financial section that Michael just went over, there should be a page called FY19 budget. So please turn to this. This is my best estimation. As far as forecasting, I'm using FY18 allocations we received in July and October of this current year, and hoping that it won't delineate from the allocation this coming year, so July and October. We've estimated the carryover. So basically, if you look, everything's separated by admin, adult, dislocated worker, and then you just have your bottom line total, which is the $5.685 million. Does everybody see that? So that's the estimated revenue. And then that's, everything below is just where I think we're going to spend it in cost.
And Russ Care has also helped me put their budget together. And it's also represented down here in program delivery costs and one-stop operator costs. And at the very bottom, you'll see total reserve FY19 funds. So I'm assuming we'll have a carryover balance for next year of $695,000. So what this means is that we should spend it regardless of what we have, what the allocation is. Hopefully it's not going to delineate too much from what we have this year. We are on target. We always spend our funds. You know, most of the expenses do stay the same. And whatever the allocation is that we do end up getting in July and October, we might have to come back and amend it if it does change drastically.
Do you have any indication from the state when you will receive those notice of funding allocations?
I do not.
Okay. We were told, I went to a financial meeting last week, and they're hoping by the end of this month or maybe early July.
Well, here's what I anticipate happening with that. Once we get the actual NFAs from the state, the budget will likely be amended. That will go to the Finance Committee for review and establishing that budget when we have the final figures. And then once that's done, it would come back to the local elected officials to approve it. So, but I think it's fairly certain that it will be amended.
Yeah, and our Finance Committee is on July 23rd, so we should have the budget by then.
We can only hope.
We can hope. All right. Any other questions of Jacqueline or of Matt? Matt may have some input. Any other questions? Hearing no questions, I'm going to call for a motion to approve the best estimate budget and the financial report. Is that agreeable? I would entertain that motion. I have a motion and I have a second. I have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on approving the financial report and the proposed budget for fiscal year 19? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, like sign. Okay, that stands approved. Thank you for being here. I know you guys have got some other things to do, so thank you for being here. All righty. Let me reload here just a little bit. I'm out of whack now. All right. You should have everybody should have a packet. Does everybody have a packet? You should have in your packet two sets of minutes. One for the WIB board and one for the LEOs. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I will. If you've had an opportunity to look at the LEO minutes, I would entertain a motion to approve those. Now, Matt is going to take care of getting a motion on the WIB board. So if you've had an opportunity to look at them, I have a motion and a second to approve the LEO minutes. No changes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, like sign. They stand approved. Matt, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you for you to get the approval of the WIB minutes.
Yeah, thank you. So for the WIB minutes, Dolly has reviewed and approved them, on his my understanding as well. But any discussion or any thought, questions on the minutes for us? And then can I entertain a motion for approval of the minutes?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. I see John Doherty. Is there a second? Yeah, David Fox. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. That brings us to the year-end review, and Mabel, I think you're going to talk about that briefly. Is that correct?
It is. Last year at our first joint meeting, We gave you guys an 8 months of progress report. It was only 8 months because that's as long as any of the workforce staff had been functioning in that in their capacity. When we started, things were pretty much at a standstill, and I think we were either behind or missing on pretty much anything and everything that we could be. We made a tremendous amount of progress in that first 8 months, and I'm sure those of you that were on board last year will remember this handout. If any of the new members want to see it, we'll make sure you get a copy as well. What we provided this time was the second document in your packet, which is 12 months in review. That is in no way indicative of all the things that have gone on each in the past year. But we wanted just to highlight a few of the things that shows the variety of activities that we're involved in. Our first, last July, we had our first visit from DOL Regional Administrator Les Range and Winston Tompo. We welcomed them to the region, and we felt like we had some very productive conversations and suggestions from them that we have subsequently implemented. And I want to say that other than the MOU and IFA we'll talk about later, we are caught up on every single thing from regional plans, local plans, bylaws, partnership agreements, all of that. We, for the first time, I think, in at least 2 or 3 years, we are not behind on anything that the entire state is not behind on. We have another local area here, Sherry Johnson, the Workforce Director of Lincoln Trail, but it is my understanding, Sherry, where are you? Oh, you are way in the back. That, to my knowledge, no other workforce area in the state has a signed MOU-IFA at this point.
I do not believe so.
That's my understanding as well. We also began last July our contract with our new direct service provider and one-stop operator. That procurement bid was won by ResCare on both counts. It is two separate contracts. There's a firewall in place, as is required by law. And we don't call them ResCare. We call them our Bluegrass direct service provider and one-stop operator. But that started, the contract started June 28th, but the official services and transition started July 1. In August, the long-awaited partnership agreement that I think we had spent the previous 8 months, and before that, I'm not sure how long, that had gone back and forth between the Governing Board of Local Elected Officials and the Workforce Investment Board or Workforce Innovation Board. But a committee was established. It was approved by both the three representatives from the LEOs and from by the two of the three representatives on the WIB representation on that committee. And so that passed. It went back to both boards and was the majority vote passed on both of those boards. So we have a partnership agreement in place between the governing boards of this local area, and we're happy to have that. It was long overdue. We also, by law, the LEOs are supposed to establish the bylaws for the Workforce Investment Board. That had never happened. In fact, the LEOs hadn't even seen the bylaws that were being used at that time. So, and this was one of the suggestions by the Department of Labor that it was better late than never. So we went through the process of establishing those bylaws, and they were approved. In September, the Southeastern Employment and Training Association, which is an eight-state region, held their conference in Louisville, and that enabled a number of the board staff as well as are the board members as well as the support staff to go to that. And those are always helpful, sometimes cost prohibitive, but where it was close by, we were able to access that, and I think that we gained a lot of knowledge in being there. We've had strategic planning committees that started work on the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, and infrastructure funding agreement all the way back to October, and we hope within the next couple of months, earlier if possible, but that will be through to completion. The Bluegrass Ad fiscal agent designation was extended through 2019, September of 2019. In November, the WIB elected all four new officers. Now, the way the structure reads in the bylaws, the WIB vice chair automatically steps up to the position of chair. That's to ensure continuity in the board. But the other three positions all changed as well. And we now have Matt Montgomery chairing the board. We've got John Doherty, who is the vice chair. Dolly Holland, who couldn't be with us today, is the secretary. And Daniel King is our treasurer. We're kind of proud of the fact that he's also an auditor. We kind of like that as the head of a finance committee. So In December, we submitted the industry certifications to CDE. It's kind of a long, drawn-out process, but it is one that was charged under Senate Bill 1 at the time that we do, and we did complete that and get that in. And it was also the month that we hosted a group of professionals from South Korea. And they were part of the UK Institute of International and Public Policy and Management, and they were here for, Ethan, where are you? How many weeks that they shadowed you?
The pretty much the entire month, 3 or 4 weeks. They were workforce professionals from the South Korean government who looked at workforce policy and things like that, and they wanted to see how local area here operated.
It was a great opportunity to exchange information and see how not only how another area does things, but how another country does things. So that was an excellent opportunity. In January, we rolled out a very minimal trial activity of the SNAP ENT, which that's the... It's the food stamp program. I'm not going to try to remember each acronym right now. It's the employment and training, the work component of the food stamp program. There has not been a lot of those folks show. It's been minimal to this point, but we have had some, and that continues. That's part of what's going to be on the agenda later today as to whether or not that contract for next year is extended. And we also, at the request of our WIB members, created a really comprehensive board orientation manual. I don't know if you all have that with you today. You do?
In my vehicle.
Oh, okay. But Hannah's holding one up out back. We always have those available. We refer to the law, to the federal regulations, and to various and sundry bylaws, partnership agreement, that sort of thing in our meetings. And I forget which member asked for it, but they said it would be helpful if we actually had those on hand that they could flip to themselves as we were referring to it. Excellent idea, and we're glad to have those available now. In February, we had several board members and staff attend the UK Economic Outlook Conference, which gave us some pretty valuable information regarding trends and what we could expect demographically and economically in our region. One of our board members, Ken Trosky, who is teaching in Greece for the next 2 weeks and couldn't be here today, and I'm sure we'd all rather be there with him. But he was actually hosting the conference. He is a UK staff person there. In March, this is just one of the... We had a job fair in Winchester. We had 41 employers show for that event and 373 job seekers that were in attendance. That's one of 37 such events we held in the past year. And we had over 1,200 folks show up for those hiring events. So I think that's a very valuable service we provide both to the job seekers and to the employers in our region. Amy Glasscock, we'll hear more about this later, but she attended her first portion of the SNAP ENT Learning Academy in Washington, D.C., but I'm going to save that till later. We don't want to steal any of that thunder. And then in April, for those of you that were at the ad board meeting, the last full ad board meeting, you may have heard Rob Perez from Deviate Kitchen Foundation speak. And Rob came to us pretty frustrated with his attempts to access some workforce services. And we kind of turned that around for him. And he's been one of our most vocal advocates since that time. And that is one of the things that the DOL review team, which again we'll talk more about later, was they said they were going to use that as a model. And when they go back, they like to report on strengths as well as any areas that you need to, you know, shore up or to have improvement on. So, but that's when that began. We also started a work and learn project with Kenny Orthotics, and I think there is some information on your handout that I won't go through in there when it talks about some of the projects that in 2018 that we've started up. So, going through the year, give me just 1 second to get back to my page here. In May, Ethan Lindell, our business services manager, served on a panel of experts at a regional SHRM meeting, and it's one of the many ways that we do outreach to businesses and maintain those our network of contacts there. I know Ethan serves on a number of boards like that or panels like that, and we were happy to be able to do that. It's something that's ongoing and fairly regular, though. I think Todd Blanton, our one-stop operator, was also part of that presentation. And again, it's just one of the many things that we do as far as furthering outreach, not only to job seekers, but to the businesses in our region. We also, we were contacted by KET to wanting to come to our youth task force meeting, which of course not only surprised us, but pleased us. And they are wanting to partner with us on some of our youth initiatives. They wanted to highlight some of our success stories in a study that I guess they've been tasked to do over the next 2 years. Tiffany was part of that, and she maintains that contact, and I'm assuming they will be coming back to future meetings as well, since we've got a good partnership going with them. And it's June. We've got two projects with the LFUCG that are slated to begin pending approval here. The coach fellowship training, and I forget what the, Ethan, what is the title for the CDL class that's?
The Public Works Skills Academy.
Public Works Skills Academy. And we'll talk a little bit more about the staff, but I'm really happy to tell you that the staff have moved out of the Goodwin Drive location that you all have been concerned about for quite some time now, over a year. And it's not the ideal situation. We look to be co-located with all of our required partners again, and hopefully some that aren't required. But that's been accomplished this month, and they're actually there. And then just last week, we had a review team of, I believe, 9 Department of Labor monitors. The number, some came and stayed part of the week, and some came later in the week and finished out, but I believe it was 9 overall. That was part of the overall state compliance review that the Department of Labor is doing at the state level. They actually visited 2 local areas as part of that review, and that was Eastern Kentucky SEP, which covers the 23 counties in the eastern portion of the state, and Bluegrass. I'll give a little bit more information on that later in the agenda, but I would encourage you to read about some of the projects that are in here. Know that without the support of these boards, none of these things are possible. So thank you for your support, and thank you for allowing us to move forward and being able to do some of these things that we've picked out just as a sampling for what we do.
Okay. Any questions?
Now, the other thing I would say on that, sorry, let's see if there's any questions.
Any questions or comments? Okay.
So as part of this meeting, and in line with what I just said, at different points today, we want to show you concrete examples of what your volunteer service allows us to do. The first one is a client testimonial from James Barnes. He is a trade participant. He is working, as many of our former participants are, so he is on video, but we'd like to run that video for you now, and you can hear from yourself, from him, the benefits that he's received. Okay.
My name is James Barnes. I'm from Lancaster, Kentucky. I've been there since I was a sophomore in high school. I'm about 44 now. So I worked at Trade Masters in Nicholasville for 21 years. And they lost the contract with Toyota. So we lost our contract and lost our business. So they shut down. And that put me in the path of the TRA in Danville. 2 years ago, I was unsure of what my future was going to be because Trade Masters was closing, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I would just go find a job similar to what I'd been doing and go with it, you know, making between $15 and $20 an hour, and same old thing, kind of boring really, but the trade, looking into the trade, started making me think that I could go in a different direction. I was very nervous when I first came in to the Kentucky Career Center. I didn't know what to expect, didn't know how all this was going to work, and just getting your foot in the door was pretty nerve-wracking. The different staff at the Kentucky Career Center, they've all been pretty easy to work with, very informative, professional, and they all, if I had a question, there was no time when I thought, well, they're not getting back with me. That was pretty quick. And anything I needed was taken care of. When I got with Amy with the Kentucky Career Center, she had told me about the maintenance technology program. Trade allowed me to be a full-time student. You know, you can focus totally on your classes. Right now, I'm a substation trainee with Kentucky Utilities. And eventually, you want to be a sub-tech. The difference in pay from Trim Masters to now is... it's almost double. I did not see myself making that much money. I thought it would be, when I got out of school, I thought factory, maintenance man, and it would be between $22 and $30 an hour. I thought that would be the top pay. Plus, I would probably have to go to second shift, be indoors, and now with Kentucky Utilities, I'm outdoors first shift, Monday through Friday, overtime if we need it, and it's a good deal. It fits me better. My feelings of the Kentucky Career Center is that it's been the best move of my life. And if you want to change your life, then it's the way to go.
Very good. Is that it? Any further questions or comments? I have a comment. We talked about DV8 Restaurant. If you haven't been there, you ought to go. They've got a great mission, but they've got better food. So if you get the opportunity, it's on Harrodsburg Road going into Lexington.
Get the best burger in town. That's what it's called.
Very good. It's very good. I'm going to. You don't need any approval on any of that, do you?
No.
That brings us to item 2C, WIOA trade contracts.
Okay, I did not include the WIOA trade contracts in writing because they were over 50 pages each. And basically, these are the contracts that allow the program funds to flow from the state to the 10 local areas. There were a few wording changes in them, but there was nothing substantive. There was wording changes that included the direct service provider. But the biggest change, this was the contracts that we had the long, drawn out, and discussions with the state last year. They first wanted to issue the contracts for only 3 months.
Yes.
They finally issued it for 6 months, so which meant we had to renew them in December again, which means we have to get, and it's the same contract. And we were the only local area in the state that had to do that. This year, we all have the same contract, so I think that's an improvement. These contracts have to be in place so funds can flow. And I was told by Lori Miller in the cabinet they have to be back by the 27th because I think the state system is down from that time to July 6th or somewhere in that neighborhood for, I don't know, updates, things like that. So these are normal contracts, and we need them signed so that we can keep the money going.
Okay, I need some guidance here. Who needs to approve this? Is this the Leos or is this the WIB board or everybody?
Both.
Okay, we owe a trade contracts need to be set for signature. Depending on Mabel's assurance that, in fact, we should approve them, I would entertain a motion that they be approved and that the appropriate person is authorized to execute same.
So moved.
I have a motion, and I have a second. Any discussion? Any questions? Hearing no discussion or questions, I'm going to call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, like sign. They stand approved. All right. What's up next?
We have two contracts that are in place now that we have the option to extend for an additional year. I think actually it's longer, but we typically just do year by year. One is the contract with ResCare to do the direct service provision, and they also won the one-stop operator contract as well. Those will need to be extended through June 30th of 2019. The other contract is the opportunity for work and learning contract with it is a youth contract that we have with that group, and I will give you my rationale for approving both extensions. ResCare has met every goal that was set for them with the exception of youth enrollments. The youth contract was a subcontract in the ResCare contract with United Way. That has been terminated, and they will be handling that directly next year. And the performance metrics for that contract, because we were so far behind on everything, including enrollments, last year we focused on quantity, and we set enrollment goals for each of the programs, youth, adult, and dislocated worker. This year we want to focus a little bit more on quality, so those performance metrics are in your packet there. One of the things that continues to be problematic during our reviews is the quality of the case files. So the case quality, and if you're looking, this looks like this in your contract, if you are in your packet. But one of the pay points is 95% of those case management files that are monitored and pulled for quarterly have to be correct and nothing missing, and have valid documentation of case management notes in there, or that pay point will not be paid. We also have 75% of the exitors that we fund should attain a credential, and this is for the adult and dislocated worker, and then 75% of the exitors would be entering employment. On the youth portion, again, we have the case file quality, the 95% that has to be met through quarterly monitoring. We have a requirement from the state that 20% of those work experience funds, and I may be wrong, that may be a federal requirement as well, but I know that it is a state requirement. And we want to make sure that that's met. I don't believe that it would have been problematic this year, except we weren't clear on everything that could be charged to work experience. For example, staff that are developing the work sites, their travel, their time that they spend on that. We were, I think, in the beginning looking simply at the participants' work experience pay that was in there. So we want to ensure that we meet that requirement. That's one of the pay points. They have to meet their 20% work experience. And then the same thing, the exiters, 75% with a credential or 75% entering employment once it's done. So that is that. On the OWL youth contract, they really stepped up to the plate this year. When we started, they had a requirement that they enroll 20 participants. They agreed to double that to 40, and they've met that goal. The contract for next year increases it to 50 participants, and I have no doubt that they can make that. So we, rather than have to procure and go through all of that again, we have two contracts in place that we feel are entirely viable and that have performed admirably, and in the shortfall on the youth enrollments have taken measures to correct that. So it would be my recommendation that those contracts be approved for extension through June 30th of 2019.
So the contract in question are with ResCare, both of them, direct service provider and one-stop operator.
One-stop operator.
And OWL Youth.
Yes.
There will be a quiz on all the acronyms when this is over.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pass it, you have to pay for lunch. All righty. Everybody understand what we're doing? Okay. I would enter.
Mr. Chair, I need to recuse myself from voting on this.
Okay. Are you asking that your vote not be counted then?
Yes, sir.
All right. We will note that his vote will not be counted. Who's taking the minutes?
Kevin.
Okay, good. All right, I've got a one whose vote will not be counted. I will entertain a motion to approve these two contract extensions.
We'll make a motion.
I have a motion. I need a second. I have a second. The motion and a second is to approve the two contract extensions for direct services with ResCare and OWL Youth. Is that correct? Have I said
yes.
That correctly? And that the appropriate people be allowed to execute those. I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Any more questions? Noting that we have one person whose vote will not be counted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, like aye. They stand approved. All righty. And that brings us to
work-based
learning contracts, and that is item 2E. Wait a minute, I'm out of
it. Is
this it?
That is it.
Okay. I'm just going to turn it over to you rather than me stumble
okay.
through it. I'm going to, if you don't mind.
Well, this is actually, Matt, a WIB item only. The WIB ask us to provide them with a list of active OJT contracts at each meeting so they can see the employers that are involved and what kind of activity is going on. That is in your packet. But because we do have some WIB members that have a connection to some contracts that are proposed, we always bring those to the board for vote so that there's full transparency. And no question that, you know, there was this was something that the folks weren't made aware of. We have three of those now. I think we have two OJTs and one work-based learning contract.
Just so we know, you're an OJT is?
On-the-job training.
All right.
And Ethan Linville will give you a brief overview of each of those contracts and the board member that is involved.
Yes.
Ethan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, sir. So we have three proposed sites that propose a possible conflict of interest. The first is the renewal of the AMTEC contract with Mr. Doherty, where we have a work-based learning contract where we will give dollars for the on-the-job training hours in the electrician apprenticeship there. The second is Dolly Holland is not here, but Clark Regional has put in a bid to do internships and on-the-job training with their nurses' aides, and I believe one x-ray tech. The third is with LFUCG. Barry Gray is a co-CLEO, so it could be a possible conflict of interest. We have two programs that we're entertaining at the moment and need formal approval. The first is the Coach Fellowship. Commissioner Ford with Social Services has received grant funding from a private foundation, I believe, one of the Carolinas. They will be serving five African-American youths in high poverty zones here in Lexington that have misdemeanors on their backgrounds. Through our coordination, they will be placing them with the city in five positions that fall under our five high demand sectors. So it falls in line with our policy where we can provide funding for those work hours. The other program is the Public Works Skills Academy that I've worked with L.A.D. Dickinson on. Six individuals will go through that training. They will receive their CDL license. And we will be funding, I guess, 320 hours of that internship, but they will be staying on with the city afterwards for more on the job training. But as a formality, I do have to bring that in front of the WIB because of those possible conflicts of interest, and look for your approval.
I would just add that we have had contracts with Amtec in the past, and this is more a continuance. They've been very successful, and we've been proud of that partnership. Healthcare, obviously, is one of our most high demand sectors, and I think the positions that are offered there are definitely in line with our OJT contract parameters and things that we should do. And absolutely working with LFUCG on those projects, there's no downside to that. So if anyone has questions, I'm sure Ethan or Elodie, for that matter, can answer those. And but otherwise, they will need your approval to move forward. And, of course,
yes, I will recuse myself from this.
You're asking that your vote not be counted?
Yes, please.
And Dolly Holland isn't here, so she doesn't have to recuse herself. She's the one at Clark Regional Medical Center.
Very good.
I'll ask that. I recuse myself from the vote as well.
Okay.
Okay, so they're not asking her vote not be counted at all.
Right.
Because if they recuse, it counts with the affirmative vote.
Oh, okay. Well, then
so just asking, we note that they are not being counted. I'm going to turn this over to Matt. Matt, this is your vote.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any questions or further discussion on this topic?
Yeah, I have a question about the CDL.
Okay.
The CDL training that we're doing, I realize that we're trying to put people to work, but a lot of times people pursue work outside of their area with that CDL. So, you know, it's something for us to put in the back of our mind and remember we need to keep our people here in this area. But where do they primarily, the CDL folks that obtain that license, where do they obtain that employment?
The continuing employment after they pass the training and stuff will continue on with the city, I believe. How many jobs do you guys have open right now that require a CDL? It's something.
46.
There's 46 open right now and no one to fill them.
Okay.
So the program is built to move them straight from the training and them acquiring their license into those city positions.
I just don't want our people to leave our area.
So, no.
Good point.
Yes,
good point.
And CDLB, so it's limited to, it can go across the state line. So there's different CDLs. There's CDL A, B, and C.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions or discussion on that one? Can I also then entertain a motion to extend that contract and give the proper folks authority to sign that contract to extend?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, great. Any other further questions or discussions? Otherwise, for the WIT members, can we vote by signifying aye?
Aye.
Or opposed? Okay, the motion so passes.
All right. Go ahead and just wade into this and let you lead us through it, okay?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. That brings us to item 2F, Medicaid and SNAP, ET, and Memorandums of Agreement. And it looks like we're going to have a project update, but we have some concerns about these contracts. Is that correct?
That is true.
And would you set the table for us and tell us what we are doing and what your concerns are?
We actually have three guests from the state today that I want to introduce again. Doug Beard, Doug, I'm not certain what your job title is. I'm terrible with them. What?
It's impressive. It's special assistant.
Okay. And Darlene Bustle, you, what is your job title?
We are a liaison.
Okay. And Commissioner Leathers, I know yours. So Ray Leathers is the commissioner. So I will start by saying, did you want to do a little brief over?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the invitation, I understood that I would just simply be answering questions, but I will not pass up the opportunity to address this board and say, first off, just from the state, we want to thank you for the work that you're doing related to workforce in the Bluegrass area. And for those of you who are not familiar with what Kentucky Health is, I'm going to give you a very fast, very quick crash course in what that means. Kentucky Health is yet another acronym that will be on your quiz. So the health part of Kentucky Health stands for helping to engage and achieve long-term health. And that really is the goal, and there's four pieces of that of Kentucky Health, and what you will be focusing on is the third in that, but I'll go ahead and let you know what all of those are. First off, what we have seen from the Medicaid expansion, which went almost double what it was expected to do as far as the population that expanded Medicaid would serve. But one of the things we've noticed is that individuals are not using preventative services. And those preventative services, if they were in use, that would do two things. One, that would bring better health outcomes. And number two, of course, that would save money in relation to health costs. So the first part of Kentucky Health is helping individuals to understand and use preventative care services. The second part of that is that we're looking at this new health and wellness program to mirror insurance, right? How we understand commercial insurance. The reason for that is that as we attempt to transition these individuals into the workforce and then ultimately into self-sufficiency, where they will no longer need the Medicaid, we need it to look more like what they will be replacing Medicaid with. So we need to kind of mirror that commercial insurance. There will be things like premiums and co-pays, we have a system called My Rewards in which they can earn dollars that then can be used and redeemed for things like dental services and vision services. So those things will exist as well. The program then, like I said, would be structured in such a way so that they can begin to understand what it is like to have insurance that is not Medicaid. The third piece of that is the PATH Community Engagement, yet another acronym in PATH, and that is partnering to advance training and health. This is the part where we look to the workforce boards and to kind of give you a background of how that came to be. When this was first being discussed, the idea was presented, and collectively the workforce board directors said the best place to implement this community engagement to move people towards self-sufficiency, to get them into training programs that are in high demand, to lead them to the jobs that are available. To do that, the best opportunity is through the workforce boards, ultimately through the career centers. So based on that, the structure has been set up then as we reach out to the 10 different workforce areas and say, we are looking to implement this program through your workforce boards and through your career centers because we believe that you are the best avenue for these individuals to find self-sufficiency through employment. So that is part three. Part four, which also impacts our current workforce state, is that there will be a strong emphasis on tackling the opioid epidemic. So another part of that will be treatment for substance use disorders. So that is part four. So that's a real quick crash course on what Kentucky Health is. What we are asking from you today is to consider the contract that is before you. And like I said, understanding that this is in fact the best avenue for us to reach potentially 40,000 individuals in this area. Well, that is who potentially could participate in PATH community engagement. What we have estimated is about 40% will participate, so it puts you just over 17,000. So we are looking to utilize the career centers, the workforce systems that exist here in your area, in order to provide opportunities for those 17,000 individuals. I know and I'm aware that there are some concerns, and be happy to take your questions and answer those to what we have determined to be a sound answer to the best of our knowledge.
I'd like to, that being said, I'd like to kind of make you all aware and everyone else in the room where we're at with this. So up until about 6 weeks ago, we were told that this was, it only requires the WIB chair signature and that the LEOs were not involved. About 6 weeks ago, there was a PowerPoint from the state, and then it was discussed on the statewide conference call that went out that says that if the WIB chair signs the contract, that implies you have the CLIO's approval to do so. But the CLIO's are not required to sign. Now, this is the first meeting, because the CLIO's haven't met since...
January 18th.
That they have ever had any knowledge or contract or information shared with them about these contracts, because we were told they were not a part of it. So the WIB, on the other hand, has been involved since at least last fall. There's been two different letters submitted to the state with questions and concerns, none of which have been satisfactorily resolved at this point. In the packet that you all have today, there is a list of concerns, questions and concerns, pulling excerpts from the contract and what the concerns are that we have with those. And I would really encourage you to look through that. And if you have concerns today, these are the folks that you need to ask as far as getting resolution to those answers. Some of the main ones there have been the issues of liability, and it's been also that the burden of success, and you mentioned there's four parts of this endeavor, seems to lie solely on the workforce part, which is the community engagement part, many things which we have no control over. There's many undefined parameters. And unlike anything that you've ever experienced in workforce development, if there is a finding or question cost in these contracts, there are penalties associated with it. Not just you repay those funds from somewhere else, there are also financial penalties involved. The contract language, quite frankly, in both the SNAP ENT contract and in the Medicaid contract is not good. I want you to look through your questions and concerns, and I want you to raise them now. I'll start it out by saying that, one of the things that that concerns me when we're talking about penalties and meeting performance metrics, which are not defined. There is no standard set. It's been said that the first year will be used as a baseline. It doesn't say that in the contract at this point. But it says that, and it's that we'll go from there. The contract says, though, that if the Department for Workforce Investment elects not to issue a corrective action plan in any particular instance, that this decision will not be construed as a waiver of the Department of Workforce Investment's right to pursue future assessments of any performance standard requirement and the associated penalties. Now, I don't know how you read that, but that sounds like that can go back retroactively to me, when at this point we don't even have the baselines or those The penalties aren't defined. There's numerous mentions of penalties, but they aren't defined. And there's general metrics laid out there, but there is no numbers associated with it. So can you help me with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So there were actually lots of things there that I would like to comment to. As you explained, some of this stuff seems to be somewhat undefined, and we have taken approaches, in fact, to define specifically what individuals ask. And what I would like to remind the board of is this. Kentucky Health is a new project, right? WIOA is a little bit different in that it built on top of WIA and multiple laws previous to that. Kentucky Health is something new across the nation. And so, yes, we are, in fact, learning as we go through this. And when we talk about things, when you mentioned about things being undefined or using the first year to build for a baseline, that is exactly what we're trying to do. This contract is for just 1 year, and we do anticipate that there is a lot that will be learned during this first year that we will be able to make adjustments to subsequent contracts that would come in the years to follow. And so, for example, penalties. We have a process under the penalty section to explain how we would address a potential action that would result in a penalty. But a couple of things that I want to share with you. There are no financial penalties in this contract. So this one-year contract has no financial penalties. In the situation with the CLIO and the LEOs, we would certainly like to address that we definitely want the LEOs and the CLIO to be in support of this contract. The reason that we do not require the signature, contracts can be signed, according to WIOA law, can be signed by just the WIB. Now, within that, the way the law describes it, it is up to the WIB internally to seek the approval of their CLIO and LEOs to do that. So, I don't think that the intention ever was that we certainly did not want the LEOs or CLIOs to be involved. What we are learning and moving forward, and what we will attempt to solve in this next year, is for subsequent contracts, will we ask for the signatures of the CLIO? And at this point, that is an unanswered question that we will spend much time trying to develop an answer. To provide some assurances during that time, and I believe that you have that in your packet as well, I will refer you to a modification. Now, there will be a modification that will be available to every area that will come out in July. And that modification has wording based on an indemnification clause. And because we're just now getting to understand that with some of the WIBs, the conversations have not necessarily taken place between the CLIOs and the WIBs. What we're trying to do is we're trying to take away what liability they would potentially carry according to the WIOA law. So what has been done is that our partner cabinet, the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, has worded this indemnification clause that will be part of a modification, again, to come out in July. And in that modification, the Cabinet for Health and Family Services will assume all of the liability for the first year, while we figure some of these things out and while we answer questions such as how do the LEOs and CLIOs fit into this contract and should a signature be required.
So comment on that. First of all, I do have an email from Andy Hightower in answer to the questions that says the LEOs have nothing to do with this. This was back way early on, but that was a statement that we received. That's why we've never taken it to them. Secondly, you say there are no financial penalties. The penalties aren't defined. As far as I know, they could be anything. Because I don't think, Doug, anyone in this room has an objection to the overall intent of what's trying to be done with Kentucky Health. What we have objection to and concerns about is the language in the contract. Now, we have promises that a modification will be forthcoming. The emails that are in the packet from Assistant Secretary Christy Putnam and State Attorney Clay Lamb, there is the contract clearly says no modification or change of any provision in the contract can be made unless it is mutually agreed on in writing and incorporated in a written amendment. It goes on to say, memoranda of understanding, written clarification, and or correspondence shall not be construed as amendments. So unless it is an amendment to the contract that is formally signed, it means nothing.
So absolutely. The modification that is promised for July will in fact be an amendment to this contract.
But we're expected to sign the contract as is, and we haven't gotten through nearly all the questions on it yet this week.
Absolutely. So what we're asking the board to sign the current contract with the understanding that a modification will come in the form of an amendment during July. What I would like to remind you is your rollout plan for this area does not begin until December. So my point would be this. If, in fact, there were hesitation about whether or not that modification would come, I would encourage you to sign the contract, understanding that we promised the modification for July. Come July 31st, if that modification has not been received, which I assure you that it will be, but let's assume in an alternate world that somehow everyone who's aware of that modification that's to take place is no longer at the state. In that instance, were that to happen, you would have 30 days to come out of this contract before implementation in December.
So
I can assure you that that will come, and it will come in the form of an amendment.
And here would be...
I'd like to ask a question, too. Just help us all understand that if we are not rolling out until December, help us or remind us of the urgency of us signing up right now versus waiting for that modification to be in place.
Absolutely. So this is new to us as well, but one of the ways that this contract is done, it was done separately from, or differently rather than the way your WIOA contract is done, is this: it's typically been a one-for-one contract. One area signs with the state, two parties. With this contract, it is a little bit different because we're asking, other than Northern Kentucky, which actually begins implementation in the next few days, other than Northern Kentucky, the nine other local areas are all signing the same contract. So we've done this a little bit different. So any modification offered to you all is offered to the other eight areas that are parties to that contract as well. But because of that, and because we have areas that have signed and are ready to start sending out an RFP and are ready to get going with this program, we need to have this contract signed this week.
So here's a concern that I have about, let's say, the modification that you refer to that relieves or that the Cabinet for Health and Family Services assumes that liability for the first year. We roll out in December, mm-hmm. if it is approved, and so we actually would have 6 months.
7 months, yeah.
Then on top of that, in that 7 months, we would have to hire numerous staff. We would have to have additional locations if we were to adequately serve these folks throughout our 17 regions. If we do opt out, if we get into this and we opt out, we have all that to deal with. On top of that, you're doing it for 1 year. So at the end of that year, all of the liability issues, all of those things that we've been concerned about from the beginning, fall back into play.
Absolutely. And as I stated, we will spend a lot of time in this coming year to figure that out. And we will meet directly with LEOs and CLEOs to figure out how we can make this work.
I don't, and okay, so, and here's something that, you know, I need explanation on as far as the liability goes, because this would be going forward as well. If the LEOs approve, we come back to the issue of liability. If the LEOs approve signing this and Matt Montgomery signs the contract, then the fiscal agent if we accept that money, the WIB is a group of volunteers. They have no assets. They have nothing to pay these penalties or anything like that, question costs, if they were to arise. So does that not, there's no way that I see around that, that that liability doesn't fall on the LEOs and on the fiscal agent. So
one of the things that we're trying to solve is that exact question that you're asking. And in order to buy some time and to do that, what we have asked is we have asked that CHFS would take on the liability for the first year. It's also one of the reasons why we've made a decision not to do dual enrollment. And that is something that a lot of the WIBs wanted to do. It's something that we at the state level want to do as well. But because of this issue, for the first year, we're not able to do dual enrollment. We want to keep very defined who is a Medicaid beneficiary being served through the Career Center and who is a VO of Wagner Pfizer individual being served through the Career Center. And therefore, there's no blurred lines between where the liability rests. With anyone served as a Medicaid beneficiary, that liability would be with the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. And also, there is no situation in which a contract can override a federal law. And so the wording that we're putting into the contract as the indemnification is really just an explanation of what the federal law for Medicaid is, in which one entity in the state is held responsible, and that is the Medicaid entity, or in this case, CHFS.
And I have one of the board members, Susan Kraft, sent me a portion, a letter on the Kentucky Constitution references that said it, and will tell you I haven't had a chance to research it sufficiently, but that the Kentucky Constitution says you can't indemnify, or that is at least what the letter said. You can't the state cannot indemnify anyone from responsibility like that. So I can forward that to you separately as well. But so in looking, and I, like I said, you have the questions in your packet. I encourage you to speak, but the ones that are of most concern to me are the ones that talk about the liability, the ones that, and again, Doug, with all due respect, what worries me about the modification is we're simply kicking the can down the road, because we're going to be facing those same issues in 6 months. For us, or 7 months, if we start December 1, that we're facing now. It is. Did you raise your hand?
Oh, okay. I have a question.
Okay.
I hope I'm looking at the right contract here. Forgive me if I'm not, but I do not see the Department or the Cabinet for Health and Human Services as a party to this contract. Neither do I see them signed as a guarantor or indemnifier on this contract. Now, my experience has been that if you're not a party to a contract, or you're not a party as a guarantor, I'm going to use that word, that's probably not exactly right, then you're not bound by the contract.
Sure.
And based on my experience, is it's all good as long as everybody stays the same in the room. But what happens if the personnel changes and somebody says, well, the Cabinet for Human Services, they've never agreed to that. I have real concerns about that. Now, I don't know. I don't know about whether the state can indemnify anybody or not. I don't know the answer to that. But that's a concern, because I don't see them as a party to the contract that by which they would be bound.
Okay, absolutely. So I can answer that. So what we've done in order to make sure that this will work is we've actually modified the cabinet to cabinet contract. So what you will receive will come from the Education and Workforce Development Cabinet. Okay. We'll be the ones that sign that, and in that situation, we are a party to this contract, so they have given the assurances that we needed to provide to you all, to us. So we've modified that cabinet-to-cabinet contract so that we can modify our cabinet to the local area's contract as well.
And I hear that, and I don't want to be difficult, but that doesn't bind them to us. That binds them to you, but not to us. So if we have cost, they have no duty to us.
Sure. So the absolute language, and I'm not the attorney, but the absolute language that we have placed in our modification to our cabinet-to-cabinet contract has been placed in this, well, what will be placed in this modification, and we have that printed for you in the packet as well.
What is in the contract itself, though, is throughout in multiple places, which on your red and yellow and white sheet, it's highlighted in different spots, is that the state is indemnified from every liability. I don't care what you're looking at. And the burden for that is with the local area. Now, the other thing that I think is needs to be brought to everyone's attention here, and I don't believe this was intentional, but if you look on page 21 of that contract, the Medicaid contract, there is a section that says the local workforce development boards and any subcontractors shall be responsible for any attorney's fees. And if you read on down through, it says, incurred as a result of initiating or defending any legal action where the Department for Workforce Investment, the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, Centers for Medicare or Medicaid Services is a party. What that actually says is that if anyone in our region sues the Department for Workforce Investment, the Cabinet, or any of those folks that I just named off, that we would be responsible for those medical fees and you, or the attorney's fees, and you can't, the state is denying any attorney's fees under any situation, no matter who is at fault. And I just want to give, because I think not only, you know, is it on my mind, is it not on the mind of the two state and federal suit that's questioning the Medicaid waiver now, it's on the mind of CNN and everyone else out there. The situation that I fear is that because a participant, a Medicaid recipient, refuses to participate in a work requirement, they'll be cut off from their benefits. And when they're cut off from their benefits, whether they suffer some devastating illness, whether they die of natural causes, or whether they die for lack of medical care, there will be a lawsuit. The nation is waiting on that. And the way that reads right now, if that person in Estill County or the family in Estill County decides to sue the cabinet over their relative being cut off from benefits, we would have to pay those charges. We would have to pay the attorney fees.
So, two things to address that. Number one, I just want to make sure that I clarify, because the term work requirement was brought up. We don't have a work requirement with this. We have a community engagement. And that is just something that I just want to make sure.
And what do they do in community engagement?
Community engagement is anything that would, so there's lots of opportunities, and there's in fact a list that I can get and email to everyone.
Education, volunteer service, work. And if they fail to participate, they will lose their benefits.
Sure. But there's also opportunities for, if you're a caregiver, for a sick relative, you can obtain.
There are exceptions.
So there's I just wanted to clarify that, but I will address your question, and I will say this: that is a very good catch. That is not at all what our intention was, but you're right. As you read it, that is the situation. That is our response to that question. Perhaps moving forward, when you receive the modification in July, we may have to address this as well. Let me instead tell you what the intent was. Again, I'm not the attorney, and I appreciate that you have caught this. This is a good catch, and we appreciate that. The intent of this was that you could, in fact, use attorney fees from this funding until the point that you entered into action against the state. That is the idea.
Why would we need attorney fees for any? What? Give me an example of where you think that would be used.
I don't necessarily have a specific use case for it, but again, because it's a contract, I think they were trying to cover bases. So, again, attorney's fees that you need are covered in the funding until the point you use them against us. Now, you're right how that's worded, and we need to send this back to an attorney, right? We can look at this wording and maybe perhaps, and I can't promise to this part, but perhaps there could be a modification, because I think what you said is a very valid point, that we talked about, you know, action with the state, not looking at it in such a way that perhaps we were both being sued by a different entity, that therefore that funding would not go into play. That is certainly not what was intended by it. It was just the idea that you cannot use the funding for action against the state.
And while I appreciate the intent, the contract that you're asking us to sign by next week, that is the wording in it. Okay, and I want to make sure that the board's aware of a couple of other. I won't go through each and every one of these instances where the state is, they are not held liable for anything. They have no culpability. It's all on us. But they're outlined in your packet there. That's a concern. What I do want to point out, and this is a totally different thing, on page 37 of the Medicaid contract, it says the contractor shall certify by signing the contract that to the best of its knowledge and belief, the contractor or its principals are not presently debarred, suspended, proposed for debarment, or declared ineligible for award of contracts by any state or federal agency. That is exactly what the governor's letter from May of 2016, I believe, first of all, stopped all funding and proposed debarment and reorganization immediately. And the only reason that that hasn't happened is because the Department of Labor said you can't do that without due process. So that's all on hold, and that case is active and ongoing. Mm-hmm. So how could the Bluegrass Local Workforce Area, with that in that contract, even sign?
So, again, it is about the intent, and I'll share the intent of what this particular wording was supposed to mean. And the idea is that if you were a part of litigation, investigations, or proceedings to which the state was not aware, then you would need to disclose that information to us prior to signing. What you have referenced, the state is very much aware of, so we know those details, and the state is comfortable with this board signing.
But that's not what the contract language says, again. And I think the intent's great. I think the verbal assurances and the emails that we've received are great. I think the contract language is extremely risky. It is contradictory to some of those emails or verbal assurances that the contract itself says very clearly do not hold any weight. Unless it is a formal amendment and that contract is changed, that clause stands.
I have to tell you, I appreciate all your assurances and I appreciate you coming here today, but that says you certify by your contract that you're not presently under debarment order. I say this with all respect. It doesn't say that there are none that the state is unaware of. And you know, and I know, everybody in this room knows, a contract is interpreted within the four corners of what are on the pages. And it's not what we meant or what we thought, but the four corners of the contract. So I have some real issues, and I know you're trying to give us assurances, but you're saying one thing, but we're going to sign something that's in writing. And in my mind, once we sign something in writing, that means we have reached a meeting of the minds, and we really haven't. I just think going into this is real dicey right now. I'll just be very frank with you.
And we focused on Medicaid, but I do want to point out that in the fall of 2017, Kim Minky, who was chair then, submitted a letter of concerns to the state. There was not a response, but Matt Montgomery followed up with a letter in, I'm not sure the date of your letter, January, December?
December 15th.
We've lost your audio. We've lost audio on Matt.
Oh, just November, December, or something like that.
December 15th.
Okay. And those, none of those have been addressed. I mean, we got a response from the state, and I've got in there, if you go to the part where it's talking about the, this is the first page of it, on the SNAP ENT concerns, it's got the signature at the top. And we've got the question that, or concern that was listed. We've got the response from the state. And we've got the concern or staff note that remains with that. Let me get you. Yeah, you just tell me.
I'll find it.
But I guess in a nutshell on that, most of the contract concerns that are in the SNAP ENT contract are the same concerns with the Medicaid contract. It's not
right. So the SNAP contract that is printed is not this is the current SNAP contract that is set to end in a few days, as a matter of fact. So a new contract will be sent shortly, and a lot of that new one will address some of those that we learned from the old contract that will be more similar to the Medicaid contract that's in front of them. So there's not current.
That scares me. Because actually the SNAP ENT, I think, is of the two, more conducive to working with the local area. The Medicaid contract is, I think, puts more responsibility on us and offers less recourse. But the other thing on the SNAP ENT contract that is up for proposal right now that you need to know is, in the beginning, and Matt, please feel free to address this. The WIB voiced a lot of concerns about that contract, but it was a small amount of money, and it was a trial project, and they said, okay, we'll try it. It was $99,000. That was it, and it was through June 30th of this year. The amendment that we got last month, I think it or it may have been June, I don't know, that I actually received at 3:08 on a work day and was requested to have it back by close of business that day with the chair's signature, wanted to add for the Bluegrass region, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was somewhere close or approximately $250,000 to that SNAP contract that had to be spent by September 30th. Now, because of, one, the lack of clear guidance on what we can actually spend that on without fear of it coming back on us is still out there. We are not the only local area in the state. Most of the local areas had not even spent a fraction. I think we had spent less than a third of that $99,000. There is absolutely no way, without guidance and without some hard plan in place, which nobody has at this point that I know of, that we can spend that money by September 30th of 2018. So none of that really makes sense to me. I'm hoping that you can explain.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the guidance that did come with that increase in funds, which we did receive from DCBS, double, in fact, the what we had originally received. And knowing that with that's within the same fiscal year, we need to spend that by the federal fiscal year end of September 30th. So the idea was, and the guidance that was presented, was that we would hope that the WIBs would, in fact, hire success coaches, and that would model something similar to the Employer Resource Network, which we would start putting career coaches on site with individuals. So it's not just a matter of getting clients a job, but it's showing up and helping them with the soft skills things and a lot of the things that now the temporary employment agencies are doing for the Career Center to move towards a model like that. And that the idea was, since the funding did end on September 30th, that new funding would arrive by then that would allow you to keep these individuals employed and paid through Medicaid. Because one of the things that we have come to understand is that a lot of the individuals who are receiving Medicaid are also receiving SNAP. And in that situation, you do not have to meet both an ENT requirement and PATH community engagement. If you are meeting for SNAP in an employment and training component, then you would also be that would comply. You would be in compliance for Medicaid. So what we're seeing is while their numbers have been low and a lot of that money has not been spent, what we have to consider is that these are able-bodied individuals without dependents. So their benefits range anywhere from $20 a month to $200 a month, with the average being right around 80 or 100. So we kind of knew going into this that with a lot of them perhaps working under the table or having other sources of income, that to commit to an 80-hour a month component where they're receiving $80 or $100 a month, a lot of them would determine that it's just not worth that kind of investment and they would forfeit that. So we expected that to happen. But what we think will happen moving forward is after the Medicaid is implemented, you're looking at a much greater incentive, an incentive that's worth about $670 a month. And so because of that, if an individual wants to maintain that, then they would in fact, as a matter of fact, they're required to, if they're receiving Medicaid and SNAP, they're required to meet their employment and training through SNAP, and then it would comply for Medicaid. So what we see happening with the influx of Medicaid individuals is that the SNAP program will actually increase. And in that situation, the funds would have been certainly more.
So SNAP, ENT is what, the Department of Agriculture?
Yes.
And Medicaid is Health and Human Services? Mm-hmm. And when in my discussions with the DOL monitors last week, unless that person is receiving both, there's no way that we can do what you said. It would be like us using WIOA dollars to fund, you know, some migrant and seasonal farm worker.
So any PATH community engagement individual who is receiving Medicaid, whether or not they come into a career center, they can do this 100% on their own. If they qualify for SNAP and are compliant with SNAP, they are meeting for Medicaid, and Medicaid funding can be used to pay for their services.
So that, but that is something that would, unless they do both, you can't commingle those funds.
They are doing both. They're receiving both services. They're receiving SNAP benefits. They're receiving Medicaid. They only have to meet one of those requirements. And in that situation, they have to meet the SNAP requirement, and Medicaid can fund that.
I would like to see that in writing.
Absolutely.
Did you have a question?
I think we ought to see if anybody around these tables has any questions or issues, and we're going to give everybody a chance to talk, speak.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
And we'll continue. I think it's important that everybody have their opportunity to speak here. And if you have anything to say or questions, now's the time to raise them. We don't want to make a career out of this meeting, but we do want to give everybody an opportunity to say what they want to say. I'm going to start right here. Any questions or thoughts or comments or concerns?
I just got a question. If we don't sign this, what's the penalties? What happens if we don't sign this by the 27th?
So, absolutely. So, I appreciate that you brought that up because I understand that everyone has taken some time to evaluate the risks of signing. I would encourage you to consider the risks of not signing. This is an initiative of the governor, so this is going to happen in the Bluegrass area regardless. So, our option is, if you choose not to sign, the state will be forced to procure from a different entity to perform those services in this area. So part of why I'm here is not only just to convince you to sign, but I am the biggest believer in the workforce boards and in the career centers. And if we're going to do this work needs to be done through the workforce boards and through the career centers. But we know that this work is going to happen regardless. So what that does, and since you've asked what are the risks of not signing, so that means that this new entity that has been procured to perform this service, they're going to start working with the local employers, the ones that Ethan has invested a lot of time and energy into building relationships with, and they're going to go to these employers, and these employers who have been asking our career centers, where is the pool of people, where is the candidate pool where we can get the skilled workers that we need. And with 3.8% unemployment, we understand they're not there. But what this program does, this program brings what we expect to be about 17,000 more people that this entity is going to be able to say to employers, here are some employers, and we're going to train them, and we're going to get them skilled, and we're going to hand them to you. And I don't think you want to miss out on that. The other thing I would ask you to consider is this. In the first year, you are set to receive $1.9 million in funding to carry out this program, with an additional $500,000 in implementation funds to use basically between July and into November, because your rollout is in December. In the second year, because keep in mind the first year you're performing this for 7 months. In the second year, you're again, we've got some details to work out for the new contract, but potentially you're set to receive just over $3 million. Carry out this work. What I would ask this board to consider is, with the fact that the president has before cut WIOA funding and the potential to cut WIOA funding again, what I would ask you to consider is this is potentially an additional funding source that can come through the WIB to carry out these services. And ultimately, when we get to solve the dilemma of dual enrollment, and we can do dual enrollment, then that is money that helps everybody. That helps WIOA participants, Medicaid participants, SNAP participants, Wagner-Pizer participants when we solve that. So I would ask you to consider that as a potential reason or a potential risk of not signing as well. And we are to the situation where, and I apologize, I'm not sure where the 27th came from, because I actually have tomorrow as the deadline. We potentially could work with the 27th. But again, this is, we appreciate your concerns with the contract, but this is the contract. We have offered up multiple phone conversations, multiple meetings where we collected questions, we collected concerns, we sent those through our contract procurement team, we sent those through our legal team, and came back and made significant changes from where the first draft of the contract was into this draft of the contract. We've moved the needle significantly, mainly in this indemnification clause. And we spend a lot of time talking about this indemnification clause, but one thing I would like to remind you is, without the modification, just simply looking at the one that's in front of you, you have signed that already in the SNAP contract. So it was the wording was word for word what was in the SNAP contract, also in the Medicaid contract, and we've gotten a lot of pushback from that, and we understand, so we'll work with you. We got the modification that can come in July, but we certainly have moved the needle from where the contract was to where the contract currently is, collecting the feedback from the different local areas and making adjustments.
Mr. Pryor.
Well, it's as far as I'm concerned, here we go again. You know, we've been down this road before where they've asked us to sign something. It seems like to me regardless of who was on the conversations, I don't think I was a part of any of those, but our concern as Leo's have always been the fact that when these things go bad, we're held financially responsible for them. And it seems like from the beginning they didn't want us to have much input on it. I think they actually didn't even want us to have any input on it. But the bottom line is that, you know, you're asking us to sign a contract with a guarantee from a party that's not even party to the contract, with a wing and a prayer promise that you're going to hold us unresponsible for anything that goes wrong on it. But the bottom line is, I think we will be responsible because of the way the federal law is written. So I have concern. It just feels like, you know, honestly, and again, with 100% respect, feels like we're having a gun put to our head and saying, here it is, you got to do it today. I mean, it's just the wrong approach, I think. And I have a problem with that myself. I mean, I agree with everything Harold said. I mean, how can you all, when you're not even signing the contract, make a guarantee about the contract? I mean, listen, I'm not questioning your word as a human being or anything else, but the bottom line is, legally, you all are not bound to do that. And if something goes wrong, the counties are. And that's been our problem all along with the amount of input we've had on this. That's all I've got to say about it.
Mr. Boggs.
Yes, I have a question about the waiver that we're going to give, providing that they are under legal action here. Is that a federal law that says just because they disclose that we can give them an individual waiver?
So I will have to get an answer to you for that. I honestly don't know.
I thought the language was pretty clear that it wasn't what
I understood it to mean that you would have to disclose things that we were not aware of, or we are aware of.
Any and all legal action? Any and all legal matters?
That's my understanding.
So our organization has one of these SNAP E&P contracts. We were the first one in Fayette County to do it. And we see it kind of coming in waves, but we haven't seen people exactly lining up to want to do this. So do we really think that by telling them that with all the options that they have to waive out of it, that it's really going to make that big of an impact? I know financially our contract is only a 50-50 match, and it's pretty challenging for us to provide the service.
Doug,
well,
and then
again, I would go back to the new. They are slightly more incentivized. Again, if you look at the SNAP benefit, it's very small. I think maybe if we, each of us put ourselves in that situation, would we think that a $100 a month SNAP benefit was worth an 80-hour investment? Probably not. But that 80 hours becomes a little bit better of an investment when you're talking about a $670 a month benefit on top of that $80 or $100 as well. So we do expect that there will be an increase in that traffic. And by the way, we appreciate your partnership with the program, what you're doing there.
Doug, did the you said there's this new SNAP E&T contract that's coming out. Did the CLIOs sign that?
They're not on that one. It is for 1 year, just like this.
Do you have a waiver from the Department of Agriculture for liability for the first year?
We do not.
Mr. Soper.
Well, as a new board member, it's somewhat daunting to come into a situation like this, but what I'm hearing is we need to pass it now to see what's in it in July, which sounds very similar to what Nancy Pelosi told us about Obamacare, and very concerning. And as a new board member, there's no way I could foresee being part of a contract approval that doesn't have a legal opinion that says our people are comfortable with it. And I just, you know, if you can find someone to sign this contract and do the work, then I say do it.
So just a couple of things with that. Yeah, I do want to, and I appreciate you joining this board. I do want to point out that, you know, we have presented this, not this contract, but an early draft of the contract several months ago. So it has had opportunity to go to, you know, legal teams to have them review it, to get feedback, and we've been through that process, and we have done that with so much of this. And, you know, currently with a week to go, we received 15 pages of questions that we've sent to our legal team. You know, we're trying to get, you know, some responses for it. But yes, time is limited, but I just want to make it clear that we started this process when there was time available. And I'm not asking you to say, let's sign the contract and figure out what's in it. I'm asking you to sign the contract with the understanding that because of this is, in fact, a 10-party contract, that the modification, the only way we can do this now to give what the WIBs are asking for on this last piece after we have already moved the needle is to say, sign the contract that's here. You have the wording right in front of you of what will be in an amendment, and we promise you that amendment will come, I'm guessing, by the second week of July. And that, so we're not asking you to determine, you know, sign it now, find out what's in it later. What's in it is there, and this is a contract we're asking you to sign. And what I hear that the WIBs are having trouble with, we're addressing in a modification that will, in fact, be there. And if it is not, then you have the opportunity to step out of the contract in 30 days.
That is not the only thing that the WIBs are having trouble or concerns about. And Mr. Soper, this is his first meeting, but I think Matt can address the fact, as well as the other board members here, this has been on their agenda every single meeting for probably the last year. certainly since last fall. So, I mean, they have written their letters of concerns, and they've not gotten satisfactory responses. And the liability for the first year is definitely, that's one issue, and it's a step in the right direction, although it doesn't have the binding force of contract at this time. But there are others, and they have been presented numerous times.
In a phone conversation that I had with you, I asked specifically what you thought it would take for the board to sign, and that was, in fact, what you said. If we could just get something that would show us for 1 year that there's not going to be penalties, there's
actually,
not going
to be
this
loud clause. Actually, I said I preferred two.
Sorry, what?
I said I preferred two. But
so we were able to give you one.
No, you've not given anything yet. You've given the promise of one. And I won't speak for anyone else in this room, but the trust factor is a little thin in the bluegrass area. So, but I'll leave it at that. It's up to the board.
Let's give everybody an opportunity to say, and then we're going to bring this to some sort of conclusion. Yes, sir. Anything to add or say or question, thoughts, concerns?
I mean, it sounds like that in spite of all the iterations that we've had, that the state still admits maybe there's a little bit of poorly worded parts of contract because the amendment is coming. And I guess when we talked about just a few minutes ago when we needed to sign by, there was confusion over 21st versus 27th, and it sounds like maybe an amendment's coming out in 2 weeks after that.
So officially we can't get the amendment until after the contract. It goes into place.
Sure, but I know our chair asked the question earlier. I'm not sure I got a real clear answer on why it has to be signed by the 21st or the 27th ahead of an amendment coming out.
Sure,
if the time frame is that short, it seems like there's got to be somewhere to bridge that gap.
Okay, so
in a satisfactory way to everybody.
Absolutely. So again, because this is a multiple party contract, we have ones that are waiting to put RFPs on the street so that they can be ready to go. Your area does not implement until December. We have some areas in the contract that begin implementation in October. And so because of that, by July 1st, they need to be able to put an RFP out in order to hire the staff that's needed, in order to set up offices, if additional offices are needed, and those kind of things. On top of that matter, there is the matter of the finance cabinet, which has worked with us slightly, and we have bought a little bit of time, but really, technically, the finance cabinet needed this by June 8th. And so we bought some more time with them because they have to have all of that filed before the beginning of the fiscal year, which goes into effect July 1st.
Leo should have to approve first.
Judge?
Confused about some points, certainly. Frustrated by a similar story that we've been dealing with for months and months and months. I'm not sure if the doing the right thing is any different than doing the wrong thing. There doesn't seem to be any way to win. And I understand that there's been, you mentioned there were several reviews by legal teams, those kind of things. There's one absolute, and I don't mean this to be insulting. There's one thing I've learned since taking office in January 2015 is that not all attorneys employed by the Commonwealth of Kentucky are infallible. So mistakes are made, and perhaps there were some mistakes made here. Perhaps it's intentional, and I'm not adept at telling the difference, to be honest. So it's very frustrating. I'm not sure what I would choose to do personally, to be honest.
Judge?
Sounds like we're standing on two different planets, but we're looking at the same star to me. We've all got the vision, but if I have a contract that says you will give me $100,000, but my intent is for you just take me out to eat, I don't know that you signed that contract. And that's what I'm hearing. There's not satisfaction from the, I guess it's the WIB board or the CLIO board. So I don't know that I could be in favor of signing something that will be changed in 2 weeks, just like you said, that short time period. But you've explained some of the deadlines that you guys are under as well, and I certainly appreciate that.
And the change certainly is based on the request. You all have requested a change. This is the change. This is the best we can do to offer that and to satisfy that is to present a modification in July.
But just to make sure, you understand, Leo's are not signatories to this contract, just so everybody is reminded.
I think what you just said is my main concern as a board member of the workforce board, is the Leo's are not required to be a signature to the contract. And I don't know when, I don't know if you all were here in December, but when we met in December, and I think I was probably one of the most vocal board members at that time, where I expressed concerns over the original contract that we had. And one of the biggest concerns I had was that I have a strong feeling that this workforce board does not have the authority to sign the contract. We are a group of volunteers. And if the workforce board signs the contract, who is going to receive the money? Because right now, the fiscal agent was procured by the local governing board. They report to the local governing board. And they pay the bills for the workforce board. Right now, who is going to receive $3.5 million? Is that Chairman Montgomery's bank account? Because there's no mechanism for any type of agreement between this board and the fiscal agent or the governing board. That concerns me. Liability, that the first time there is a question cost, and there will be question cost, is who is going to pay the money back. Right now, under the workforce, the governing board, right now under WIOA, the local public officials are responsible for those monies.
Because if they don't,
and it's not the workforce board. It goes all the way to them.
It's a moot.
And actually, I believe in the law, it says that the governor,
trust your judgment,
under NWIOA, it says that the governor is not precluded to doing whatever necessary to recoup question cost. Now, CHFS is an entity here, but they are not, CHFS, I think, is not responsible for the money. I think it's the Commonwealth of Kentucky's governor.
That's right.
I think it goes back to the governor. And believe me, he or she is going to do everything possible to recoup a question cost, period. And right now, I think this board has a real liability of assuming that issue. And I guess what really concerns me is on December 17th, when Chairman Montgomery sent the letter, I think we talked about that very issue. Is that why was there no communication link in writing with the CLIO? Because that's where the greatest responsibility is going to go back. So that was December 17th, and this is June 23rd, 22nd, or 23rd.
It's 21st.
The easiest way to have rectified that whole situation is to have had this contract between the CLIOs and the cabinet, not the workforce board. And I think we brought that to the Commonwealth's attention in December. I don't know if you all were here on board at that point in time. I don't think you were. I might be wrong. But I think that was the biggest concern. So we brought that issue, and that it was not addressed. So the Commonwealth went back and did the same thing that they did with the original contract with this one. They have eliminated the CLIOs. The two CLIOs and every local elected official in this state. And I guess what even makes me even more concerned is before I sat on this board, and Mr. Detlinger, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 2 years ago, Secretary Brinkman came and spoke to the Bluegrass Area Development District's annual meeting, of which I attended as a citizen from Scott County, and mentioned this program. And spent a considerable amount of time talking about it and looked out at every public official in that room and said, we want you on board. We want you at the table and we want you here. Well, something happened between Brinkman and the governor and the cabinets. Because then all of a sudden, the public officials were just cut out of the whole process. And it seems like that is the, I don't know, the way that the cabinet wants. But it certainly puts volunteers around this board at a great risk. And that's a risk that I don't know that I want to take. And as a prior commissioner in Frankfort, and as a prior local workforce director here locally, and as an employee in Buffalo Trace Area Development District, my job was to look out for the best interest of a public official. And when I was in Frankfort, my job was to look out for the governor. It was the cabinet secretary and the governor. And I don't think we're doing that here. And I'm uncomfortable with it.
So to address a couple things that you said there, yes, the board is an entity that can sign. And can, as far as who will receive the funds, you can make an agreement with your current fiscal agent, or you can procure for a new fiscal agent. Those are options that you have. But they would be able to do that. This is a priority of Secretary Brinkman. This is a priority of the governor, and that's in fact why we're here today. And one of the things that I want to make sure everybody on the board understands, because that is the case, and I do not have a full grasp of what the Bluegrass area has experienced or what they may even currently still be experiencing as far as their relationship with the state. But again, I'm a big believer in the workforce boards, a big believer in the career center, and because this is the governor's initiative, we are here to help, and ultimately we are on the same team. It is frustrating that we could not agree on contract language. But again, we started this process early on, and I understand that there remains concerns, and we're trying to work those concerns out for the next year. They won't be for this year, but we most certainly come to the WIBS and ask the WIBS to sign. And I don't know exactly where the information came from that we did not want the Leos and Cleos involved, because our understanding is that if you are signing, that you have communicated with them as a board, you've communicated with them and you have sought their approval and been given their approval in order to sign. But that doesn't require a signature of theirs for us. That's an internal process. So that's, I guess, it's not that we're trying to exclude them at all, but we're coming to the workforce boards. And again, having done this and looking at this situation, we're trying to come up with a solution in the future, and perhaps in the future we will ask them to sign, just like you have suggested. Maybe in the future the contract is with Leos and Cleos. I don't know what that looks like, but I know that we're trying to work that out.
Mr. Wireman, do you have any input, questions, comments?
I'm from organized labor. I deal with contracts every day, execute contracts every day. We don't sign contracts until we know exactly what's in them and all the amendments in them. This is my second meeting, so I don't know what has occurred prior to. But some remarks alluded to earlier, we are bound by the confines of the four corners of that page when it's signed. But I still have the question, there can be an amicable resolve here. We can wait, and we can see the amendment, and we can see the contract, and we can get answers to all those unanswered questions that's been proposed here today.
So,
thank you.
If that is the direction that this board chooses to go, is to wait at the state level. We're forced to procure. We have accepted questions from all the WIBs. We've sent those again to our procurement team, to our legal team, and we have made changes. We now, at this point, don't have the time to do that, unfortunately. What we can give you is we can give you the wording of what that modification will say, and we can get that out to you first or second week of July. That is, at this point, the best that we can do, but offering more time, we cannot do. So if the board chooses not to do this today, then the state is forced, at least for this next year, to procure those services.
Can I ask a question? I mean, if the Commonwealth is going to procure for those services, it's going to take you, I don't know, 3 to 6 months to procure it.
Yeah.
So if we don't sign it today, yeah, and you have a greater knowledge of what's already here on the table, and what we'd like to have changed, it would behoove the Commonwealth, I would think, to continue to work with a group that's already aware of what's going on than to start a whole new process and procure something brand new with entities that don't even know what you're doing. You might not even get any bids for it.
You kind of make the point as well. This is also my second meeting as well. I think I might be the only C student in the room. So forgive me for asking this. Is it possible, can the state make it possible, where we can move forward with a memorandum of understanding that we're going to sign with that caveat that we can at least see what we're signing?
I mean, it's on. I don't know exactly what page it's on, but it's printed for you.
Okay.
It's there.
The email is changes. In your packet.
Yes, absolutely. It's word for word.
And it is liability for not SNAP-ENT, Medicaid only, by CHFS for the first year, which all of the things that you're concerned about and voicing concerns about would, unless they are changed in that period of time, which we will only be operating 7 months in that period of time, will kick in at the end of that. That's the only thing. I mean, that was my reference to, are we really just kicking the can down the road if we agree to that now? Because it is not a long-term... It's not a long-term fix.
And we can't operate with that contract with that same caveat moving forward that these things have to be in place in year two?
Well, we've not had very much luck in getting them out in year one, but we can certainly try.
That would be my only...
So okay. just so you understand, the wording that would be part of the modification are on these two pages. It's the two pages directly in front of the SNAP contract, and you see the highlighted area. And that is, there looks like a letter to you got a whole punch out. I apologize for that, but we can get you the full wording. I believe I have a page that's not full punch if anybody wants to see it. But that is the exact wording that would be in the modification.
I want to make just a couple real brief comments, David, before we ask you to make some comments. It's just two or three observations. One, we have been led to believe that the Cabinet for Human Services is going to indemnify us on any losses. There's nothing in the contract that says that. All lawyer fees as set out in here will fall to us, and that's not acceptable. There is a statement that if you are aware of debarment, it doesn't say if the state is aware of it. It says if you are aware of it, you cannot sign this. By definition, I don't think we can sign it. If I understand this, all liability falls to the LEOs. And I want to say one thing. I've not practiced law for a few years. I've been doing something else. But I've never heard of a contract that says when I sign it, it's implied that somebody else has approved it. I've never heard of that. But I want to read one thing to you, and then I'll quit and let somebody talk. It says, this is drafted by the Commonwealth. By fixing signatures below, the parties verify that they are authorized to enter into this agreement and that they accept and consent to be bound by the terms and conditions stated herein. There is nothing, ladies and gentlemen, that says, except if we get it modified. When you sign a contract, you state that we have had a meeting of the minds. And let me say, for Harold McKinney, there has been no meeting of the minds here. Now, David, did you want to say something?
I just have a couple comments to make, Judge. I think as Ms. Kraft pointed out, I just want to point out the role of the Bluegrass Area Development District, serving as the local area's council of government. And as such, we have the requirement to serve a number of state and federal agencies doing plans, programs, and projects for Central Kentucky. As Ms. Kraft pointed out, there was a procurement for us to be selected to be the fiscal agent for the Workforce Board. And then on the heels of WIOA, in addition to that procurement, there was a designation that was made by the local elected officials to designate us as the fiscal agent and the sub-grant recipient. So as such, we're directed right now to receive, manage, and administer funds for adult, dislocated worker, and youth. OK? Okay, we're not really involved in SNAP, EMT, and Medicaid type situations like that. That's a new thing. Now, we're not afraid of doing new things, and we you know, we welcome the opportunity to partner with new agencies and to be able to do new things. We want to look for ways where we can extend our services and provide more help whenever possible. I think Judge West was correct, or you know, when he talked about you know the vision and the process of the vision. And Secretary Brinkman certainly laid out the vision you know, 2 years ago at our board meeting in January of 2016. It's a vision that I endorse, and it's very similar to you know President Kennedy's vision of putting a man on the moon. You know, and that was the vision. But implementation is the key to success in any vision. You have to implement it correctly, or the man doesn't get on the moon. The vision doesn't come to fruition, and that's where I see some, you know, some major concerns that have been mentioned in this contract that I see. So first of all, like you know, there will have to be, following this line of thought, there will have to be an additional procurement, regardless of which way this thing goes, because if this was signed by the Workforce Board, then the Workforce Board is going to have to procure the Bluegrass Area Development District to be the fiscal agent. And I have to return to a board of directors to ask them, are you willing to accept these terms and conditions in order to serve as a fiscal agent? One of the downfalls that you mentioned, you know, is the low unemployment rate associated with Central Kentucky, 3.8%, which is my understanding practically full employment in any definition of what unemployment rate is. We're still in the business of doing adult dislocated worker and youth. I mean, I don't think it matters to us where those referrals come from, whether we're on the front line of the doors receiving them through Medicaid, SNAP, ENT, or whether they're being referred to as from another third-party private sector entity that is saying, hey, we just brought in a person who's on SNAP, ENT, and we need them to go get youth services or dislocated worker services or adult, whatever it may be, and we're going to refer them to Mabel and her team of workforce professionals to do that. I'm kind of indifferent on where those referrals come from, whether they come directly to us or through a third party. I don't really think it makes a difference or changes the mission that they're trying to complete. So finally, the last thing, and I think that you know we've talked about a number. I mean, Judge McKinney pointed out some of the very big levels of concerns that are in here. There's one tinier one. Well, it seems tiny or may seem tiny because it's confusing, but it's a very important one to the lady sitting to the right of me, to our CFO, Jacqueline Vaught, and that has to do with indirect costs. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but this seems to constantly be a source of confusion associated with anything that I do with the state. And so I just want to ask you first, and then I might ask Mr. King to help me with the definition. But do you know what an indirect cost is when I just put you on the spot and ask you that?
I mean, I'd have to look up some information.
Okay. And that's fine. And I'm not trying to embarrass you or put you on the spot. I know you're not an accountant by trade. But and I'm going to do the best I can to define it. You can correct me, Mr. King, if I'm wrong. But basically, an indirect cost is essentially a shared cost. You've got a requirement to do something, but it benefits more than one grant code. It benefits more than one agency that you're serving. And we serve an alphabet soup of agencies: Department of Transportation, HUD, RD, Administration of Community Living, ARC. I mean, the list goes on and on. DOL obviously is one of the ones as well. So we have shared costs, and if we have those shared costs, we can either directly bill it. And if we directly bill, there's going to be a cost associated with doing that. But if you can pull it together, you reduce the overhead associated with distributing those costs to grant codes. So the definition of an indirect cost is any shared cost which if it was directly billed, would be disproportionate to the benefit received. So in other words, you've got a cost. If you want to, you can just pull it together and just charge everybody a certain allocation of percentage based on the plan that you have. Or you can take the time to hire more accountants to directly bill it, but then the benefit you receive from that is disproportionate to the effort that went into it. So sitting in this room right now, servicing the Workforce Board, servicing the Bluegrass Ad, servicing the Leos, there's three people sitting in here who are indirect right now. You've got Tab Patterson, who's doing audiovisual right now. That's a function that if the Workforce Board and the Department of Labor had to procure on their own, you have a full-time employee who's doing audiovisual stuff, just to be able to come in once a month and set up a webcam. That's an expensive cost.
Absolutely. First incentive is not to procure this. We want
And then you've got your CFO, same thing. I mean, you have to have a CFO. And then you have you know, the direct, you know, the direct service or the employer of record, your executive director would be me, who you're hiring again to do all the services again. So those are shared costs. If we're precluding indirect costs, then I can almost anticipate what the Bluegrass Head Board of Directors result is going to, or the Bluegrass Head Board director going to say about signing a contract with anyone from the force board. They're going to say we can't do it. And the reason why we can't do it is not because we don't want to partner, not because we don't want to, because if we do, we're going to be in violation of every bond that we have.
So, yeah, I understand that concern, and I we have addressed the issue of indirect costs. And I know that in the original SNAP contract, it said no indirect costs.
Where it still says right here.
Okay. So I do have some guidance on that. Okay. Again, that's a I'm sorry, what question number, what page number is that?
It's page 15 of 16, page 30 in direct cost.
Okay. So that actually is one of the things that we're working through as well, because we do want to be able to do them well. So we want to be able to use all the same. So our overall vision for the career centers is this, is that we have integrated services that regardless of what you need when you come in the door, what program you're required to participate in, or what you're seeking, that any individual who works there can potentially serve. And when we get to that model, which we're not, that's why we can't do it the first year, because we've got some, you know, we have to figure out, okay, so, you know, if we blur those lines, then it gets questionable about, you know, were they VO, were they Medicaid, and then who's responsible? Because again, for Medicaid, it's CHFS. So those are things that we do have to work out, but ideally we get to where that is a percentage. So everything is split by a percentage of use.
And that's, and now you're speaking my language. And when it gets to that, then you know, then I think we're really making hay at that point. And that, and you sort of just, what you just said right there sort of defines the entire existence of the Bluegrass Area Development District. Because we can share resources among 17 counties, we continue to exist. And as a result, the viewers that are in the room don't have to individually go out and have a Mabel Duke, 17 Able Duke, 17 Jackson Bosch, 17 Tab Pattersons, because they have one that they can share. And that reduced costs for government. It makes things go a whole lot better. So when that's built into an agreement, or if that, you know, whenever that might occur, you'll have my support, but it's got to be built into the agreement before that can happen.
We're going to try to bring this to some sort of conclusion. We only brought one lunch today. So, Matt, are you still with us, or have you dozed off?
I have comments. I mean, I think as we start talking about this, we're going to talk about options and talk about what we want to do. But fundamentally, when we get to that statement around, are we legally able to sign it based on the disbarment status? And I think the statement was made a little bit earlier. You know, there's not that there's a gun to our head or anything else in terms of talking about that. All the disbarment statements and everything else is before my time, I know, as chair. But is that something that we could encourage the state to close by tomorrow, and then we could sign it right after that, and then we'd be legally able to sign this document? And then we'd meet again as an option. I know we meet again already scheduled in August, but we could come back and, you know, if something isn't to our satisfaction, we could execute the exit clause there. Is that an option? I mean, is that something that the state could go through and close the disbarment, just get that done? I don't know all the details of where that is or anything else, but let's get through that, close it, so we're legally able to sign this. Because if we don't answer that question, I don't know if we're legally able to sign it anyway. And then we just want to give you as much time as possible so that you can procure as successfully as possible.
So I will need to get an answer from our legal team and our procurement as far as how fast they can get that to you. But when if we can have that tomorrow afternoon, when can you sign it?
I can sign it tomorrow afternoon. And if we agree to sign it, I can sign it tomorrow afternoon. But I think we aren't legally able to sign it unless that disbarment information is closed.
And you get the approval of the LEOs.
The LEOs don't have to approve it, do they?
I want to insert something. This procedurally, I'm a little confused here, because this thing there's an implied approval by the Leos. I've got some Leos here. I'm gonna just call on you all. In your mind, have you approved this?
No, sir.
In your mind, is there any implied approval of this contract? Okay. I just want to make sure that whoever's taking goes on record that all four of the Leos sitting here say there's no implied approval of this contract.
Yes, and I apologize, Judge. I was not trying to imply that.
I know you weren't, Mr.
Let's get to that first step of that. If we've decided or we agree that because of that statement we aren't legally able, you know, how do we get over that barrier before we even talk about anything else? Because that's fundamental.
Susan, you had something. Ms. Kraft, you had something to say.
Yes, sir. Can you reference in WIOA where,
if you think they're going to get that bargain
where
done by tomorrow,
the Leos, where the Workforce Board can get approval from the CLIO to sign a contract? I'm aware in WIOA where the CLIO has the responsibility by law to approve in partnership with the board a partner in the one-stop. But I'm not aware where the CLIO has to approve the board to assign a contract. So in this situation, I just want to make sure the board members understand this, that right now, the CLIOs don't have anything to do with this. This is us.
Correct.
This is the Workforce Board.
That's
so whatever
correct.
We choose to do, we are assuming the liability and responsibility
incorrect.
For it. They have nothing to do with it.
I think you are correct, Ms. Kraft, and that's why I want to make sure we stated there's no implied improvement here. So you are dead right, or correct is probably a better choice. All right, Matt, I'm going to turn it over to you, see how you want to proceed with your board.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we've got the options out there. I'd really like to. So our option one, I guess, and I'll probably number these and butcher them, is that we do not sign, and with the understanding that the state will move on without us. Option two is that we do sign, knowing that we do not have the approval of the Leos, and that we would plan to evaluate the updates that are coming in the next couple of weeks, such that we could, you know, pull the ejector seat if necessary. But I'm not sure I see other options that are out there.
Can I propose another option?
I would love it.
I'd like to propose an option that we don't sign, and we keep open our door of communication with the Commonwealth and get something finalized and done in the proper manner to possibly work with the governor and the two cabinets on the initiative. But only after all of the parties are okay with the language in the contract. And if the Commonwealth doesn't choose to take that option, then that leaves their option of going out and procuring another whole entity to do whatever they want to do with it, and that's fine.
So we're definitely interested in keeping communication open. We are bound by some time restrictions. So because of that, maybe we look for that in fiscal year 20.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, that's probably the most palatable to everybody. If we can get some of this language changed, I think we have to get the disbarment closed or change that language in the contract. There's a few things I think that we still need to do, but if we could, if that timeline can be fluid at all, such that we can all get to a good place and get everybody comfortable, that's probably the highest chance of success for the overall program.
Is that a form of a motion?
Yeah.
I mean,
if it is, I'll second it.
So
So could you restate the proposal for me, please?
So I think, is that something, I guess, with the state, is that something where we can work with you to try to accelerate the closure of our gaps such that we could then get, a review done with the WIP board to whether it's implied or explicit approval that they would have such that we could move forward with you more rapidly? Is that something you're willing to work with, or are you telling us today that if we do not sign today or tomorrow, that that you're going to go on without us?
So the answer to that is I am going to always try to continue to work with you. That is my role as a liaison to the WIP boards. I cannot make you any promises beyond tomorrow that there will still be a contract to sign after that. I think what would definitely be beneficial is that we continue the conversation. So I don't know if this board would choose to assign a committee that would work with us over the next couple of weeks, perhaps include a Leo on that as well. And maybe we can try to continue to answer some of these questions. I just can't make promises for what's expected from the finance cabinet and what our cabinet will ultimately choose to do. But I will always advocate for the WIPs and local workforce boards, and we'll try to do what we can to accommodate your requests.
Well, along those lines, assuming that we can get a little time to work together, would we have volunteers, or would there be folks willing to work with us both from the Leos and from this board to form a smaller committee to work with them and try to get through this quickly?
So are we coming back together as a whole board to vote on this if we appoint a committee? Or?
To say that a different way, I mean, I don't think we have to vote, but I don't think that we're in a place where we're going to sign today. I think, if anybody is thinking that we are, right?
Don't you have a motion and a second on the floor?
Okay. I apologize for being remote on vacation this week, but is anybody volunteering then to be part of that committee or willing to do that over the next couple of weeks to get us there? I can't see the whole room.
I think, Matt, we have a motion on the floor that I think probably we need to vote on first, and then we look at forming a committee to move forward. But I would think that the workforce board is going to have to come back together to vote on it again. I don't think it's something we can do in 3 weeks.
I think we have to work towards hammering out an agreement and then decide if we need to have a session or if we're close enough. If we're not close enough, then definitely not. But I want to be respectful, too, of the state and the procurement process, that if we aren't going to get close in this exercise for the benefit of our constituents, we absolutely want to give them enough time to be successful.
There's an African proverb that says, when elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. So I would have to agree with you. I think the most important thing to remember is the constituents.
I'm sitting here thinking the same thing. And I'm on a few other workforce boards, and I've voted to approve it. And I've got staff in the career centers, or I voted in 2 other years to sign it. I've got staff in career centers that are going to probably work with some of these people. I would hate to not see us have control of it and do it with the staff that we have, that, our great staff now. That's my thought. So I'm probably in the minority or going against the green, but I don't want to be a hypocrite in one area and vote for it in a couple others. So
and I apologize that we've had so much discussion. What do you feel the motion on the floor is? And then we'll get back and close out when we can kind of talk about the others.
Who's taking notes?
You have to restate your motion.
The motion was an option 3, which is to not sign the current MOA as presented, and to ask that the Commonwealth keep open the conversation with our board to see if we can clarify some of the board's concerns. And if we can't come to an agreement for a new contract or a new MOA to sign, then the Commonwealth will simply procure another provider. I think is what I said.
That's correct.
Okay. I think just to amend that amendment or amend that motion slightly, we have to determine as well that we are eligible to sign. So we have to fix that language regardless of where we go, right?
Yes.
So that has to be done. But so the motion out there, as I understand it, is that we propose that we do not sign today, that we work with the board or the state in good faith, and in doing so, we get to an agreement that the LEOs would support, that the board would support, so that we could move forward, but that we would also need to answer the question of whether or not we would be eligible to sign it regardless. And so we need to close the disbarment before we'd be able to sign or change that language in the contract.
Yes, sir, I would agree.
Okay. So that motion is out there on the floor. Is there a second or any changes to that?
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there a vote? And I think for this one, it's going to be a little bit tough. So let's go and actually do this individually from right to left, if we could. So Mabel, if you can help me execute that.
Okay. Ryan?
I'm going to abstain from voting.
I agree with
you. I'll abstain.
I, of course, agree.
I vote no.
So you're saying no, did you want to sign it? I just want to make sure I'm clear.
No, I don't approve of the motion. So I'm voting against the motion.
Okay.
I'm in favor of the motion.
I'm going to abstain.
I'm in favor.
I'm in favor.
Did you get his?
I'm in favor.
I can't keep up with
this. Did you get his back here?
Steve said yes.
Yes.
Okay. I am not very good at this. Hannah, are you?
We got it.
I need.
The motion is passes.
What was your vote? Agree.
Have you got it? What's the tally? Yay and nay.
If I have it written down right, 6 in favor.
And?
2 abstain. 3?
3 abstain.
3 abstain. Okay.
Is that it?
There's a no.
And one no.
6 in favor or 7?
6. Or 4 no.
It's hard to, yeah, David, true.
So just by a show of hands, who voted in favor of the motion?
From up high.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
7. Who voted no, not in favor?
He's out of the room.
Okay. 1, no. And how many abstained? Okay. We got it.
Yeah.
So the motion passes. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like the record to show where the motion was not made to be any negative or adversary comments or concerns against the program and not wanting to work with the Commonwealth, because I think we do. I simply think that we need some real clarification to what we're signing before we go forward.
Okay.
And I think that what we need to do now is, in that spirit, is how do we want to go help work with the state to resolve that as quickly as possible. And so, who wants to be involved? How do we get involved? And how do we make that so we can push it as quickly as possible? That
I would suggest, in light of the fact that we've got a few items that have to be covered today and we have to be out of here by 3:30, that we will send out later this afternoon a call for volunteers from each board. We'll try to do the same as we did with the partnership committee and have at least 3 from each the WIB and the LEO, and I will forward that on to you and both Judge McKinney and Mayor Gray when that's done.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Okay.
Matt, does that take care of what you want to get done?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think we all
want to
do the right thing, and let's just not let time pass and get the
way
it
is. Is this
something
right.
You want
so
to
tell
everyone?
No, you need to see this. We'll move quickly on.
Okay, that brings us to a project update on MTech mobile training unit.
Actually, this is another video we want to show you. It's one of, I think, our better success stories. We had a mobile unit that was not being used for anything, was in a state of pretty extensive disrepair, and this is how you turn lemons into lemonade. So if you'll start that.
Absolutely. And I want to add, too, this is also the final update. The procurement process included updates, I think, quarterly. And this will be the final update. They've had the van for, or the mobile unit for almost a year, but this will be the final one.
I'm John Doherty with AMTEC, 144 member as well. The bus behind us came to us with a lot of problems. We spent some money, but we got it working the way we like it. It's very universal for us now. We'll take it out to the road shows. We've got some big shows coming up with it here. We do the construction career days every year. That's been a hit. We'll take it around to a lot of the high schools. They love to see it. The kids love to see it. That is, and the trailer we pull behind, it's got videos. It's got pictures. It's got sound. A lot of things we doll up on the inside of it. The kids love it. When we pulled up to a scholastic area, the faculty comes out. Not the kids are excited to see it, but the faculty are just impressed. The teachers, the principals, they come out and they say, wow, look at what's coming up. And we've had a lot of government support. We've had governors and executive people come out from different government aspects and say, wow, look at this thing. And then, of course, we're of course sponsoring CKY Careers on the side of it as well, MTech. And it's a great storyline to talk to the government people in the different areas. And we've been all over the state, Kentucky, from one to the other. And even outside of Kentucky and Tennessee in a couple areas, we're promoting that Tennessee and South Carolina as well. So we've taken this bus around.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
It's a compliment for the
cool
workforce
that.
Board.
Yeah.
It
really is. Okay. We moving on?
We're moving on.
Okay. If you need a break or something, we're going to roll on, though, if that's okay with everybody. You can take an individual break if you need. Direct service provider, one-stop operator update. Tammy?
Yes, sir.
Is that you?
Yes.
Todd, is that you?
Yes.
The floor is yours.
And thank you. Well, you'll see in your packet that we provided a monthly report, as per usual. I did want to highlight a couple of things very quickly in the interest of time. As of 5 o'clock yesterday, close of business yesterday, we have enrolled 390 adults and dislocated workers into services for this program year. You'll note that our goal was 300, so we have more than surpassed that. And I'm very proud of our staff and the hard work that they've put in to do that. There's been a lot of outreach. You'll notice also there's been enrollments in every single county that we serve. I know that was a concern early on, but we have enrollments in all 17 counties and then some. So we'll have new goals, as Mabel mentioned earlier, for July 1 moving forward. So these reports will look a little bit different. We'll get some different information. Our youth program, you'll remember we've had some challenges with that from the beginning, and we made a change in January, and the United Way stepped the goal down to 80 for the year, and we picked up the other 220. So at that time, we had 229 youth enrollments, and I'm really happy to say today we have 252. So between OWL, they have hit their goal before the year was even over. They've enrolled 40. United Way had 64. And our team has the other 151. So there have been 32 GED incentives paid out to date. And we've got 71 young people out in the communities working in businesses through our work experience program.
So
the staff has really done a great job, and we're looking to keep that momentum moving forward into the next program year. And I'll turn it over to Todd, and he'll update you on some other things.
Also, I'll keep my report brief. I did like to report to the board that all 13 of the counties where we don't have Kentucky
thank you for being here
are now equipped with webcams and local adult ed. And we're going to be working on a press release for those 13 counties. So we are actively receiving referrals and also making referrals out to those adult ed centers and making sure that the career center services are offered not just in the four counties where we have bricks and mortar buildings, but also in the adult ed centers in all those 13 counties. Work continues on the MOU and IFA. We believe that we do have what we consider a final draft of the MOU. At a meeting with all the partners, we were informed that no MOU would be signed without the including the IFA in that as well. So Stacy and I are beginning the work of working on the IFA and getting some information from the state and the other partners on space and things of that nature. So those meetings will continue, and the work on the MOU and IFA will continue. The SAP and MT program was mentioned earlier. The numbers for that program do continue to be a little bit low in the way of people actually coming into the office. We are receiving some referrals, but we're finding that most parties that show up to the career centers are opting out when they find out that they don't actually have to participate with the career center. If they can continue to do that 20 hours on their own, a lot of those individuals are opting out. So while we are seeing some referrals and individuals in the center, they're actually not opting to continue their relationship with us.
Thank you. I understand part of H was handled in by Todd just now. You had some brief remarks to add.
Stacy, do you have anything to add to the MOU IFA?
The primary thing is they were very helpful while they were here and discussing. Todd and I met with them, and they are actually planning the lady who wrote the guidance for the IFAs and MOU. Winston Tempo with DOL is going to contact her and is setting up a training for Todd and I and anyone else that would be interested in learning how those are done. She's going to give us kind of a crash course on how to do that. So hopefully that'll help us get one in place even quicker.
Okay. Thank you.
We have another success story for you. I'm sorry.
We might want to hand out tissues for this one.
Just a comment, and maybe you weren't aware. I'm the keeper at the state level of all the MOUs and IFAs. And to the comment that was made earlier, I have 9 out of 10 MOUs, and only probably have half of those of IFAs. And what I do is review them for compliance. I do have a template for an IFA that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to it. I'd be glad to send it.
Okay, that'd be great.
To see it.
Yes.
And we have a success story.
Yes.
Do you just require tissue? Is that what I hear?
And I grew up in Frankfort, and I came to Lexington in 1988, and I started my career here. I lost my job at Freedom Metal. Then I was in two motorcycle wrecks, and that was in 2010. And they were within 6 months of each other, and they laid me up. And the last one, I'd gotten some trouble, and I was put on probation. And the last wreck I had, I'd been drinking, and it revoked my probation. So I went to the penitentiary for a year. And when I come out of the penitentiary, I didn't have a place to live, and I didn't know what I was going to do. I was going on unemployment at that time, so I was on my last installment for extended unemployment. So I went to the career center, and then I see a flyer that was on the window there. So I put my application in, and I didn't think, at my age at that time, because I was 53 years old, I didn't think that, you know, that because at that time, there was a lot of unemployment. About a week or two later, Randy called me from the Career Center and asked me if I was interested in coming to a program that Amtech was putting on. And I said, sure, I'm interested. So I came to the orientation. About a week in of the two-week program, I went to John and I asked him, I said, John, you know, what is my possibilities of coming to work for Amtech? And being the age I am and just being done to, you know, just coming out of two motorcycle wrecks and a broke back and being a felon and he said, I don't see anything that's going to hurt your career. So I got through the rest of the program and there was six jobs that were available at that time. And when I got through to finish the program, I was one of the first ones that got hired. Once I got hired, I went into the field. So it was about a year in, and he came to me and said, Pete, how would you like to become an instructor? I said, John, I said, I don't know about that. I went and I thought about it for about a week or two, and I came back with an answer. I said, John, yeah, I'm interested in teaching. So John said, okay, I'll help you through the hurdles that we need to go through. So I got through my fourth year and took my NCRR certification, so I'm NCRR certified now. The National Center for Construction, Education, and Research. And I'm on the way to the path to get my studying to get my master's license. The Career Center helped me very much, you know, because I didn't know where I was going. I was pretty close to rock bottom. You know, if it hadn't been for the Career Center letting me know about this avenue, I'd probably be on the street right now, or in jail, one or the other. You know, anybody that's looking for a great opportunity with a company, this is the great opportunity right now, right here.
Very good. Excellent. Okay, where does that bring us to?
Career Center update. And I think probably between Tammy and Todd, you covered a lot of the Career Center update. And as I mentioned earlier, we have made the move to the Strader Plaza location. We no longer have staff located in the Goodwin Drive location here in Lexington, which is the one that's over the homeless shelter and that we've had so many incidents at in the past year. We feel it is a temporary arrangement. It is our goal to be co-located with our partners. We got the shortest lease possible, and we will go back and pursue, and hopefully within that 18 months, the state will be able to pursue the path that they have to with the finance cabinet and real properties to get a location approved here in Lexington that they're willing to move to. So that's it, unless anyone has questions.
That's Jay, is that correct?
Yes. No, that's I.
Ah.
It is the Department of Labor Review is Jay.
Okay, Department of Labor Reviews. That's Winston Tompo, and I have written down the wrong name for the guy that came with him this time. That
Julian Hardy was the federal project lead that came with him, and there were, I think, like I said, last count, there were seven other monitors that were with him.
One of the things they did was come out and interview some folks, or we came. I can't remember if they came to my place or I came to theirs. They did interview me. They were very open to our thoughts and our impressions and our efforts. They were obviously as in a review situation. They were pretty much noncommittal. But I walked out of that meeting feeling pretty good about where we were and where they thought we were. So in the interest of time, I'm going to cut it off right there, Mabel. How's that sound?
Matt, do you have anything to add? You were one of the ones that he interviewed.
No, I agree. They were much more consultative than I anticipated, but it was a good review.
Mabel, you were also interviewed?
I was, in fact, multiple times by different monitors all week. And they did it wasn't an exit conference formally, but they had a two-hour meeting with us on Friday morning going over what they felt were our strengths and what they felt the areas that we could strengthen. And I'm going to tell you, I was pretty proud of listening to those suggestions. I think we learned some things that we can put into use immediately and some that we can work on in the following year. and I believe it was a very productive review. I'm glad that they came. And that's
okay. We are, there's one thing between us and the adjournment. So make this as long as you want to, maybe.
It won't be long. The board had requested, or actually the Leos, I guess, requested the roster of the current board members, where we were at, if we had any vacancies, and when the terms would be coming off. We had a full roster of all representation by all the required groups and the number of folks that were supposed to be involved until May 25th. Hank Forker, who was the UPS representative, retired and came off the board. We're in the process of trying to replace him. I'm sure the county judges in the room probably saw the email that we sent out asking for private sector representatives that they might have in their county. We would very much like to diversify our representation over the 17 counties. And we also would like to add a cushion of at least two or three additional private sector folks so that when someone does retire or move out of the area, that we're not out of compliance, that we would still be in compliance. So I would encourage you to, and I've already spoke with Judge West about a possibility of a representative from Altec in Jessamine County, but if you have private sector folks in your counties that you feel would represent you and well and carry out your interests for your county on the board, we certainly encourage you to make those nominations, and the appointments would go through the CLIOs. You have four folks whose terms end in October. Darlene, I'm glad that you're here, because it's the last direction I had from the state is that when someone's term is complete, the nomination process and the appointment process has to be done again.
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct. And the CLIOs, in your case, CLIOs 2,
yes,
will need to resign.
Will need to resign. We have Kim Minky from Toyota that whose term is up October 20th. John Phillips, the same. He is with Monteplas. And then we have Ken Trosky, who represents higher education from the University of Kentucky, and Dr. Augusta Julian, who is with the Bluegrass Community and Technical College. So those are the four members that will be up, whose terms complete in October and would have to go through that process again.
Okay, I think that concludes our scheduled business. Anybody?
One last success story. Amy Glasscock, our very own workforce services manager back there. There is an article in the back of your packet that talks about a work and learning academy that she applied for. She was one of only 39 people from across the country that were chosen to participate. It's a long, lengthy process, and I think it culminates, Amy, in a presentation in what month?
October?
September. Give us your...
Basically, me and 38 individuals across the state, we meet twice a year, and then we have virtual sessions every month that just where we learn about what's going on in other states, best practices, struggles, just different things going on across the U.S. with the SNAP EMT program. We are given the task of creating a project that we can use in our area, and then hopefully other states can do that as well. And then I will present in September the project that I've developed, and hope that we can use it in the Bluegrass as well as other areas in Kentucky and other states.
One last announcement I make before I'll turn it over to you to adjourn, and Matt. We are very happy that the senior center here allowed us to use their facility. They did not, and they do a lot of good work here. They had said that they would appreciate anyone that wanted to stay and do a tour of the center afterwards to please do so. I know the staff will be doing it, but I just wanted to extend that invitation to you as well if you'd like to learn more about what they're doing here and see what's available. But that's it.
Okay. If I don't hear any other words, we're going to get a motion to adjourn. But I think it's important that we say it publicly to those folks who came from the state, none of this is personal. It's as the Godfather said, it's just business. So thank you for being here, and we look forward to working with you. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
I have a motion. I need a second.
I'll say.
Got a second. It's not debatable. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, like sign. We stand adjourned.